case number 10-5341, National Association of Home Builders et al. Appellants versus Environmental Protection Agency et al. Mr. James for appellants, Ms. Barton for appellees.
May it please the court. My name is Norman James. I'm counsel today for the appellants, the National Association of Home Builders, the Home Builders Association of Central Arizona, and the Southern Arizona Home Builders. The subject of this case, Your Honors, is a decision that was made initially by the Army Corps of Engineers and then affirmed by the EPA as a special case that more than 50 miles of a river in southern Arizona, the Santa Cruz River, is a traditional navigable water. And by traditional navigable water, or TNW, we seem in these environmental cases to have to always come up with an acronym for everything. As a TNW, that determination means that first, the Santa Cruz River meets the traditional test of navigability discussed recently in Supreme Court cases such as Rapanos and Solid Waste Agency of Northern Cook County. What it also does, Your Honors, is it creates what we've referred to, frankly, as a jurisdictional bootstrap that enables the Corps of Engineers and EPA to continue to regulate our members' land located in the Santa Cruz River watershed, which contains an area approximately the size of the state of Massachusetts. It's our position that the determination that was made by the two agencies is final. Under the Corps of Engineers rules, 33 CFR section 320.1A6, which is cited and discussed in our brief, as the agency concedes, a determination, back up a step, that was the authority under which the Corps of Engineers determined that the two reaches of the river are navigable. That rule provides that a determination made pursuant to this authorization shall constitute a core final agency action. But even more to the point, as I indicated and as discussed in our brief, the EPA declared that this determination, which was under review by Corps headquarters for correctness, declared that it was a special case under the 1989 geographic jurisdictional memorandum of agreement between the Department of Army and EPA.
Can I ask one threshold question, which is EPA relies on a line of circuit cases that have said the time for review is not now, but in an enforcement proceeding or later. And the line of cases EPA relies on, one of them has just been granted cert by the Supreme Court in late June.
The Sackett decision.
Notwithstanding that there's no circuit split. But anyway, they granted cert on the issue, and we'll decide it, I think, by the spring. Does it make sense for us to wait until we hear from the Supreme Court to decide this case?
Well, that's a very good question, Your Honor.
Because if the EPA loses in that case, that's going to be very point us in a clear direction here. And either way, the Supreme Court rules, there no doubt will be language that would dictate the proper, or at least point to a likely proper result here.
Well, it's our position, as stated in our briefs, it's our position that that line of cases, and I can address that right now, that line of cases, which I'll call the Hoffman Group line of cases. I think Hoffman Group was a Seventh Circuit decision. It was the first decision to address the issue of whether the Clean Water Act, by implication, precludes judicial review of pre-enforcement compliance orders issued under 33 U.S.C. Section 13 19. And that's the issue. That's what's at issue in Sackett. In the Sackett case, the Sacketts were landowners. They received a pre-enforcement compliance order and argued that they had a right to challenge it, and the Ninth Circuit said no. Our position, Your Honor, is simply that that line of cases doesn't apply to a standalone determination that a body of water is navigable.
You want to say that EPA is taking that line of cases and expanding it to an area it doesn't apply, but of course, if the Supreme Court says that line of cases is wrong to begin with, that'll make we won't even have to get necessarily to the distinction that you seek to draw.
That's true.
Make life a lot easier.
That's certainly true, Your Honor. I guess having gotten the case to this point, we're reluctant to say you should wait 9 months and we should re-argue the case based on that decision.
To lay it out, it takes a few months to decide these cases, rehearing and in-bank, cert petition. It'll be June, around June, and by June the Supreme Court will have decided Sackett.
Well,
so I'm not sure it's really actually, as you play it out, a waste or much of a delay.
Okay. Well, and I see your logic, Your Honor. I guess part of the home builder's concern was we didn't want to come into this argument today and suggest that we think that this case should turn on that line of cases because, again, as we've said, we think...
Even if the EPA wins that case, you're going to have an argument for why you should still win here. I get that. But if EPA loses that case, that's going to help you a lot.
Okay. I obviously can't disagree with what you're saying, Your Honor. I guess the reality from our perspective is we're here in front of the court. We'd like to have it decided. But in terms of your caseload, in terms of looking at judicial economy, if the panel were to decide that it's better to postpone a ruling.
Raise that. We can go on now.
Okay.
Mr. James, I have an even more threshold question, I guess, if that's an adjective. Which is about your standing, NAHB standing. 14 days before you filed this case, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Summers against Earth Island Institute. Not that it was big news, but it certainly restates and maybe clarifies what you have to show as an association for standing on behalf of a member. The closest I can find in your showings is in the declaration of Ms. Witte, or Wide?
Wide, Your Honor.
Wide. Statement that to the effect that she has personal knowledge that one or more of the members is affected by the ruling under review, or that you're challenging here. And I don't see how that's sufficient under Summers against Earth Island Institute, but maybe you can enlighten me.
Certainly, Your Honor. First of all, I think there are a couple of things to keep in mind. This case comes before the court on a motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction under Rule 12b-1. And the Supreme Court has said, and this court has said, that, again, the point at which you are in the lawsuit is important in determining the level of evidence that needs to be submitted to show standing. And at the initial Rule 12 stage, the bar is lower. We simply have to have general factual allegations that would satisfy the test. We may have to provide more detailed evidence later, but at this stage of the case, a preliminary motion to dismiss under Rule 12, general allegations are sufficient. In fact, I believe the Sierra Club versus EPA decision discusses that, and it's discussed in Lujan.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all,
it is, but you're asking us to proceed here to a fairly significant ruling on the merits,
but
without having fulfilled what seems to be a very cut and dried, rather simple, minimalist requirement for showing standing at the earliest stage.
Well, again, I have a couple of additional points to make on standing, Judge Ginsburg. But first of all, I don't think we are asking for a ruling on the merits. We're asking, I think, as we've said, that the case be remanded back to the district court so we can get to the merits. We have, you know, again, we've challenged the T&W determination on procedural and substantive grounds.
You're right. I'm equating the merits with the reviewability.
Okay.
Which has become the focus of this issue.
Okay.
Of this appeal.
But again, we're not asking at this point. It would be premature, I think, to rule on the substance. But the other second.
It's an issue that is not the merits and yet is more or less the one before the Supreme Court, or of a similar nature. Significant, maybe not, is the better term.
All right. Thank you. But the second point, which is what we've discussed in both our opening and our reply briefs, is again the relationship of home builders and their members to the challenged agency action. It's clear from the record. It's clear from the, for example, the email correspondence between the Corps Los Angeles District Office and Corps headquarters that the purpose of this decision was to be able to continue to regulate home builders' members. There's no dispute, Your Honor, that home builders' members own land within the Santa Cruz watershed. Again, as I said earlier, that according to the Corps, that's an area that contains over 8,000 square miles, that their land development activities have been regulated under Section 404 of the Clean Water Act, and that the point of this decision is to ensure that the Corps can continue to regulate home builders' members. And as representatives of the regulated community, Your Honor, you've said in the past, for example, in the National Association of Home Builders versus Army Corps of Engineers decision issued by this court in 2005 that addressed challenges to nationwide permits, that generally, as representatives of the regulated community, the members who are regulated by the agency action, the standing analysis that's required under Article 3 of the Constitution is lower.
Well, if we had a member here, that would be a no-brainer. But we don't have a member.
We don't have a specific. The only thing we're lacking is we don't have a specific member identified. We have
Here's Summers. Without individual affidavits, how is the court to assure itself that the Sierra Club, in that case, for example, has, quote, thousands of members, close quote, who, quote, use and enjoy the forest in question?
Well, the difference there, again, Your Honor, is who is the position of the plaintiff relative to the challenged agency action. In Summers, in Lujan, in this court's decision, for example, in Sierra Club versus EPA, you had an organization filing suit against the federal agency because they didn't like the way that agency was regulating somebody else. Or in the case of Summers, they didn't like
the builders is not being regulated. The association is not being regulated.
Well, again, it goes to the level of detail necessary to satisfy Article 3. In the Summers versus Earth Island case, you had plaintiffs whose members use national forest land somewhere in the United States. But if I recall the facts, there was only one timber salvage sale that was originally an issue that affected a single member. But the dispute over that salvage sale was settled. Here
we have a situation where the area that you're concerned about, Santa Cruz River area, has been at some risk of being denominated jurisdictional waters before there was this ruling or this assertion by the agency, and it's at risk after the assertion by the agency. So it's not obvious that the assertion by the agency has had any harmful effect on anybody that wasn't already there. Perhaps if there's somebody who was planning a development, who was making expenditures in the planning process, and who's now terminated that because of the increased uncertainty, which was tolerable before but has become intolerable, it would then be apparent that this ruling has had some consequence for somebody and that person and your member has standing. But we don't have anything like that.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, I think there is more than enough in the complaint and with the accompanying declarations to get over the hump with respect to a 12B1 motion. We do have, again, as I said earlier, we have clear evidence of regulation in the past, injuries to members in the past. We have the Corps saying that if these reaches, for example, I'm reading from page 85 of our appendix, if these reaches are not TNWs, there'd be a profound effect on our ability to regulate tributaries in the Santa Cruz River watershed. So the point is, we've got people that have been regulated And the whole purpose of this action that we're challenging is to continue to regulate those activities.
Well, that's, you're dangerously close to saying nothing's changed. That there's no harm, no causation, and there wouldn't be any redress.
Well, there is, because, again, as we've discussed in our brief, the decision essentially changes the calculus that's used to determine whether a tributary, a desert wash, is subject to jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act, Your Honor.
It makes more concrete, I suppose, a little more specific, the risk that's been there right along. Whether that has any consequences is not self-evident.
Well, it's,
by the way, in the Summers case, the procedural posture was that of a reviewing a preliminary injunction. Couldn't be more earlier stage than that.
Well, but again, I think the key there is looking at the difference between the plaintiff and the plaintiffs in our case, whose members are the regulated community.
You're drawing a distinction between someone who's complains about what's going to happen because of the government's regulation of someone else,
right,
versus the government's regulation of the people.
That's right.
Directly, which is what you say you have here.
Except that they're not regulating the association.
They're regulating your members.
They're regulating the members of the association. And again, the courts, the Supreme Court in Lujan, and I believe it's we quoted it in our reply brief, it's repeated again in Summers versus Earth Island Institute, that the bar to show Article III standing is higher when you're dealing with a plaintiff who's complaining about how somebody else is regulated, whereas in the 2005 National Association of Home Builders decision, this court said that standing is self-evident because the home builders represent the regulated community. The whole point of Article III standing, Your Honor, is to ensure there's
a... What the affidavits were in that case. And I don't think that's apparent from the face of the opinion either.
It's not, Your Honor. I'm not,
and
I don't.
The Sierra Club case, by the way, our case from the one that underlies the current rule now in the circuit, that was exactly the situation. The Sierra Club said we have members who use all of these nature reserves and who will be harmed in their ability or enjoyment in doing so, and that was insufficient.
Well, the Sierra Club, if I recall correctly, was a direct appeal to this court, wasn't it?
I think that's right.
Yeah, and now in this court, if it's a direct appeal, you're required to present evidence concerning your standing in conjunction with the appeal, because there are no proceedings below.
I'm corrected. Pardon me. The record shows it was a petition for review of an agency
right.
decision.
And I think
this
that's...
this is not. Go ahead.
Well, that's also, I think, and I know I'm out of time.
But
I apologize.
The other way. When the party is coming from the agency, they had no necessity before the agency to make a showing that would later stand up in court for standing, because there isn't an Article III problem at the agency level. And we had a series of cases over the years in which petitioners came here from the agencies without having made that showing, and we were allowing them to submit affidavits at the appellate court. And we put a stop to that with the Sierra Club decision and said, you've got to perfect your standing before the agency,
right,
if you're coming directly, a fortiori in district court if you're coming from district court.
And again, and I know I'm out of time, but one last point. That's another issue here. Remember, there were no administrative proceedings. We did attempt to submit comments, but that's one of our challenges is that the agency did not comply with the APA. We think the determination is a rule. If there had been a rulemaking proceeding or some other proceeding before the agency, Your Honor, we could have done what you suggest, but we didn't have that opportunity. So, again, in response to a Rule 12b-1 motion to dismiss, the courts have said that general allegations, and I believe, again, it's discussed in Sierra Club itself, general allegations of facts are sufficient to support Article III standing at the district court level.
What you just said about the procedural objection would seem relevant to the association standing in its own right, not on behalf of a member. The association wanted to comment and didn't get a chance to comment.
Well, we'd be commenting, though, on behalf of our members. And again, as you had suggested, having a full administrative record. In fact, Again, we haven't even seen the administrative record because of the procedural posture of the case before the district court. So again, I mean, in that respect, we're hamstrung, and I think that's why the courts have recognized that on a preliminary motion under Rule 12, the bar is significantly lower. Maybe we have to provide declarations from specific members on up the road to support a summary judgment motion, but we're not at that stage of the case yet.
And Sierra Club, did you say, is that the same posture as this case in terms of the regulation of the people directly? I think it's not, right?
It's not. It is not, Your Honor. That's, again, that was the Sierra Club challenging.
It's between the people who are the object of the regulation and the people who are complaining about the government's regulation of someone else. Now, I don't know how far you take that, but that seems a distinction as well.
It's a significant distinction. The cases, again, the Lujan case, Summers makes that distinction. In that particular case, Your Honor, if I recall, EPA, the complaint was how EPA was regulating industrial companies are producing a particular type of wastewater sludge. So again, the complaint about you're not regulating somebody else. And again, the case law, the jurisprudence is clearly that the bar is significantly higher when you're in that position as opposed to representing the regulatory community. And with that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
May it please the court, I'm Catherine Barton with the Justice Department, representing the agencies, and with me is Andrew Doyle, also from the Justice Department, who was trial counsel on the case. So the traditional navigable water determination is just the agency's view of what the statute requires, or statutory breadth of jurisdiction in one facet of how they can regulate waters here. It is, does not have legal effect. It does not apply, the standalone determination is not applied against any individual or any discharge. And home builders don't complain of the regulation of that water itself, but the possible effect it might have on other upstream waters. So for those reasons, as set forth in our brief, we think the case, their claim is barred at this point for three reasons, including the preclusion, standing, and final agency action. Now, I had planned to start with standing because it's true, as Judge Kavanaugh noted, we could win now on affirmance on that basis and lose in the Supreme Court. And standing is an equally threshold jurisdictional issue.
You wouldn't win a lot.
Excuse me?
You wouldn't win much, right? They could come back in district court with proper allegations or declarations.
On standing.
Were you talking about, did you mean to say preclusion?
Did I?
Yeah. You mean if?
We could, I don't know, but I'm, so I was going to proceed to standing because it gives us an alternate way to win now. Yes, the court could rule on both issues if it wanted in our favor, on both standing and the preclusion, and I can talk.
Some preclusion. If you were to lose in the Supreme Court on the case there, Sackett, that's likely to mean trouble for your preclusion theory here, correct?
We could lose just on due process and application. It wouldn't necessarily undo the statute.
When the court granted cert,
they added a question. Exactly. So we could lose on that basis. And yes, if Section 1319, if the preclusion argument goes down against compliance orders, our argument is based on the fact that this is a preliminary action to a jurisdictional determination to a compliance order and goes under the case law that all the courts have also agreed that the preclusion applies the pre-enforcement preclusion. There's a review eventually, but the pre-enforcement preclusion applies to the assertion of jurisdiction as well as, which is preliminary to the enforcement action. And that's all this is just...
Go on to standing if you want, because that's where you wanted to go.
Okay. Or whatever the court prefers to hear about, certainly. But I think that it's absolutely correct that their associational standing claim fails because they just lack the fundamental... have failed to meet the fundamental requirement to identify a particular member who is injured. And that requirement is not lessened by the language in the Lujan and other cases that say there's a higher bar if you're not the regulated party. It doesn't mean that there's a lower bar if you're not. So
not lower, at least in naming names.
Right, right. And they, the, and even the part of the declaration that says, I know of a member, I'm looking, I'm sorry, at page 38 of my brief, but she has personal knowledge that at least one of their members owns land and is applying for a Clean Water Act permit in connection with development activities on its land. It doesn't allege any harm. I mean, it just says that they are applying for a permit. It doesn't say they thought they didn't have to get a permit before, which, of course, we would say that their thinking it doesn't make the difference. But but it doesn't say that they didn't.
There's no harm from getting a permit. The Supreme Court recognized that in Rapanos.
Well,
it's big money, isn't it?
But the allegation doesn't say they.
My question correct, isn't it a lot of money to get a permit?
It is a lot of money to get a permit. Yes. Yes. But the point is, first of all, that they haven't, that even that sentence doesn't even say that it was caused, that we caused, that there's a causation problem. It doesn't say that anything about the determination had any effect on their getting a permit. It just says they're applying for a permit.
If you're on navigable water, you wouldn't have to get a permit.
Well, no, that's not the case. First of all, EPA doesn't define the jurisdiction, right? It's defined by the statute. So you have to get a permit or not, depending on what the statute says. Also, the tradition, first of all, they are claiming only about upstream waters, right? So we don't know whether the upstream waters would be jurisdictional or not. EPA has said, and the Corps said nothing about those.
The affidavit doesn't specify, it just says, owns land within the Santa Cruz River watershed.
Well, I'm saying that in the complaint, in the home builder's complaint, they specifically say we're not, our claim isn't based on the jurisdiction over the Santa Cruz River itself. It's on the upstream.
But there's nothing here to suggest that the homeowner, or pardon me, the developer, or the member in question owns land on what is arguably an ephemeral waterway. It's just in the Santa Cruz watershed.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say, is that there's no indication that it wouldn't have been jurisdictional otherwise. Even in the absence of the traditional navigable water determination, the EPA still, or the Corps still might determine that there was jurisdiction based on downstream traditional navigable waters. It might be a harder argument to sustain in court, but they might still assert jurisdiction, require a permit, or bring an enforcement action. They could be waters that were jurisdictional under the plurality test in Rapanos, and the Ninth Circuit has not foreclosed the possibility that waters can be jurisdictional, determined to be jurisdictional under the plurality test, that can provide a governing standard. So it's really completely speculative. All that there is now is sort of a more, they were hoping before that it would be tough to regulate them, and now it looks like EPA, that it's more likely maybe that the Corps and EPA will do so. But it's all they have now is a little bit of knowledge, and knowledge can't be the basis for injury. EPA could have made the determination, held it inside, gone out and done it in a jurisdictional determination, you know, or somebody could have made a discharge. They could have enforced against them without ever telling anybody what they thought. It's just an administrative efficiency that they undertook and then allowed people to know, because that's helpful to the regulated community.
Because what?
Because that's helpful to the regulated community. I think it's a good practice.
What about the fact that we're at the pleading stage here, 12b-1?
They still have to make the pleading, and they came forward with affidavits. I mean, they had nothing just in their pleadings, right?
The pleading stage from later stages in Sierra Club. So at the pleading stage, general factual allegations of injury resulting from the defendant's conduct may suffice.
I think the general factual allegation requires.
And the court presumes that general allegations embrace the specific facts that are necessary to support the claim. That's at the pleading stage, which is where we are, right?
Right.
Okay. So you don't think there's a general allegation, and We are at this point to presume that the general allegation embraces the specific facts, which may be the name of the person.
No. And especially when they've provided an affidavit. After in district court we cited Summers and raised the standing claim, and they provided an affidavit, and this is the best that they did, which not only does not provide an individual member.
On Sierra Club, in the next sentence, to say, because you're saying they had to do all this at the pleading stage, in Sierra Club we went on to say, on a motion for summary judgment, however, the plaintiff can no longer rest on such mere allegations, but must set forth by affidavit or other evidence specific facts. So that implies that that's the stage where you have to do more work in terms of showing specificity.
But in a 12B1, if you go to the stage of affidavits, I mean, then the courts, then you are looking at specific facts. I mean, that is not, it's not testable as it is at summary judgment. No, but at summary judgment, you would actually have to be able to establish a dispute over a material fact, right, to preclude. But in a jurisdictional determination on a motion to dismiss, the court still will look at, if you know, once somebody comes forward and challenges and it gets into, and then there are affidavits, the court gets to look at specific facts. They don't actually have a cite, but I could provide one. I mean, this is common practice. And in any event, the general allegations, I mean, their affidavits are not allegations, their affidavits are assertions, right, of attesting to facts. And those facts are not sufficient, and they, as I stated, they don't even identify harm caused by this action. There's nowhere that they say anybody did anything different because of this action. It's just not, it can't be enough to have standing. Otherwise, home builders could just be in here on behalf of their members and just saying, well, there are members, and this kind of thing affects them.
I don't understand. Can you repeat that?
Well, I just think they don't have a member, and they don't have harm caused by the...
Assume the reference to a member actually does refer to a live person with property in the area.
Right. Right, but they, as I said, the only allegation...
Cost more to build as a result of the EPA action than alleging.
That is not... I mean, that allegation just doesn't even stand the test. I mean, if you... Excuse me?
This is from the Island Institute. To establish standing, plaintiffs must show that they, quote, use the area affected by the challenged activity and not an area roughly in the vicinity of, close quote, the project site.
That's right. I mean, they don't, as Judge Ginsburg pointed out, they don't even...
They're in the Santa Cruz watershed is all we know.
Right. Right. We don't know that this determination makes any difference to them. It could be waters that would be regulated in any event. They certainly haven't established organizational standing. I don't know if they haven't met, as our brief sets that out, and this wasn't discussed in the argument, but they haven't even, they sent one letter, and they don't contest that National Association of Home Builders is perceptibly harmed by doing that. It's right in the heartland of the work they do anyway. It's not at all like the fair housing cases. I guess I will move then to the preclusion question, unless you really just don't want to hear about it. Okay. No, we're not touching that thing. Obviously the parties that in their briefs, having had six courts of appeals to find that Section 1319 did intend to preclude review, didn't argue about the basic question that is before the Supreme Court. So I'm planning at this point to focus on the distinction that Home Builders makes in this case, which is that the traditional navigable water determination isn't a compliance order. And I think the case law is also unanimous. Every court that has applied it has looked at the question, has determined that a jurisdictional determination or an assertion of jurisdiction is preliminary to a compliance order and can't be reviewed under the same logic.
Isn't the safe harbor ruling also?
The safe harbor ruling?
There have been some cases where the agency has announced what it would consider a safe harbor under some regulation, and that's been thought to be sufficient to, I believe, to support review on the ground that burden those who are not in the safe harbor.
But at this point, I'm not talking about final agency action, is it? I'm talking
about... Okay, I thought that was under... You're right. That comes up under the final agency action.
Okay. Yes, I'm talking about Section 1319 specifically, which provides EPA the choice between issuing a compliance order or taking an enforcement action. And courts have held that if that choice would be obviated if anybody can sue against the compliance order, and that the purpose of the compliance order is to allow EPA to address environmental violations without the burden of a lot of litigation. And they have extended that rule from that applies to compliance orders to the assertions of jurisdiction that are preliminary to compliance orders, which it makes perfect sense if they can, if you can just back it up and challenge the preliminary determination, then it would really render the rule against pre-enforcement review or pre-permitting review here negatory. So then the question here is the traditional navigable water determination different somehow from an assertion of regulatory jurisdiction? And it isn't. I mean, usually it would a traditional navigable water determination would be made in the context of doing making an assertion of jurisdiction. Here, it doesn't seem to happen very often. I'm only aware of a few times that the agencies have actually done this, but they decided to do it sort of independent of that process and let people know about it. But it doesn't make really any sense to treat that differently. We're not asking for a broad rule here that general kinds of actions preliminary to pre-enforcement, preliminary to a compliance order or enforcement are, we're not going to TMDLs or any of the kinds of things that are in the home builders' briefs. We're saying an assertion of jurisdiction, which is the traditional navigable waters determination is, fits within that rule. I believe my time is up.
Other questions? Thank you. Do you have any time? Okay. Give you 2 minutes.
Thank you.
To rebut, not to repeat.
Thank you very much. I will rebut. First of all, to go back, and I didn't have this handy. If you look at our complaint, and I'm not going to read through it, obviously, in 2 minutes, but we do have detailed allegations, Your Honors, that begin, and our complaint is set forth in detail in our appendix, that begin, actually, standing, I think, really begins on about page 112, but the key allegations in the complaint.
The best sentence or two for you.
Well, basically, Your Honor, what's on pages 115 through 116, and again, and I apologize for not calling out a particular sentence, but they're detailed factual allegations that explain how the determination affects our members and how they're injured. Paragraph 26 talks about bringing suit. 27 says how the T&W determinations will apply to and govern future permit applications. They point out that these are not site-specific actions like compliance orders, that they function like a rule. On the next page, paragraph 28, talks about the Corps' assertion of regulatory jurisdiction over desert washes, and it goes on and says home builders, real estate developers, and all other private landowners are forced to obtain Section 404 permits. 29 talks about the impact. Your Honor, you've mentioned that from Rapanos. 30.
Judge Ginsburg was asking about is identification of members who live directly in the affected area.
Well, again,
what's your best sentence or two for that?
Well, I think in paragraph 30,
second sentence, probably.
Yes. And again, Ms. Wide's declaration again reinforces that and talks in more detail about prior regulation. There are two other, I've only got 15 seconds. The other thing too I want to mention briefly is We're focusing on representational standing. We've also argued we've suffered a procedural injury under the APA, coupled with a concrete interest, which again is members' ownership of land in the Santa Cruz watershed. We've also, and I disagree with opposing counsel, we think we've also established an organizational injury under Equal Rights Center versus Post Properties by having to divert resources to provide comments, which were ultimately ignored by EPA, but that is discussed at the very conclusion of our reply brief. So
we have that.
Okay. So with that, Your Honors, if you have no further questions.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barton. Case is submitted.